The literary magazine Sport had the final whistle blown on itself last year. It was founded in 1988 by Victoria University Press's Fergus Barrowman, along with his wife, now wife, author Elizabeth Knox, author Damien Wilkins, and yet another author, the late Nigel Cox. In honour of its demise, a fat book called A Game of Two Halves contains some of the best writing in sport between 2005 and 2019. And Fergus Barrowman joins me now. Hello, kia ora.
Kia ora, Kim. Lovely to hear you.
You'll be feeling a bit sad. Are you feeling a bit sad?
Oh, I am, yes. Yeah, no, really sad. We didn't really go out with the big gesture, did we? I was listening to that lovely song, which began with "There Was Never a Plan," and that's been the story pretty much of my working life and of sport. And when we just couldn't get it together again in 2020 with all of the disruptions, we just realised it was time. So here we are, and it really is sad not to have another issue to look forward to.
There's no accusation in this question, but why couldn't you get it together again, Fergus? It was COVID, but why did that affect you so?
I possibly I don't have the same capacity for overwork that I had in my youth. And VUP's got bigger. You know, there are seven people there now and doing more books, and it took a lot of time and a lot of love and imagination to keep all of that together last year. Actually, we had a really good year, and we were really productive. And we got to the point where I just realised it was too late to start another sport. And I thought, well, rather than lamely do one that's a year late, why not just say it's over now? We can put all of that energy into some of the great developments at VUP. And, you know, I can think about other things.
Legendarily conceived, as you write in the back of Damien Wilkins' yellow Ford Escort, I like the yellow Ford Escort, and born in spring 1988. So what are you saying? That you and Elizabeth and Damien and Nigel were all in Damien's yellow Ford Escort or what?
I cannot remember was in the car, but certainly the other trio were there, and it just naturally arose as an idea, and I think by the time we got to wherever we were going, we were pretty sure we were going to do it.
There was a gap in the market for a literary magazine.
Well, there was. Islands, which had been Robin Dudding's wonderful magazine through the 70s and early 80s, had kind of stuttered into what seemed like a stop, and Landfall was in a bit of a low space, you know, edited by committee and not really with much of an identity. And we just thought, well, you know, there's a gap in the market there. I was meeting lots of great young writers, reading their work. VUP being small, we couldn't publish all of it. So Sport was a way of getting in early.
And you have said that Sport died three times, in fact. The first time was when you and Elizabeth's son Jack was born in 1992. I'm imagining that the reason for that is that you were both completely sleepless and tied up with baby.
Yeah, as I said, there was never a plan, and we life just got a bit hard in those years, as I'm sure you also have experience of. And that 10th issue, which has fat little Jack's face on the cover, was a trial to get out, and it was a bit slender. And a few people were saying, oh, you know, it's time you wrapped it up. It's had its moment, you know.
Did you hate that? Who were they? Name them.
I do hate that. Actually, one of them was Forbes Williams, the wonderful Dunedin writer, who I forgive everything. And his idea was that we should have a first 11, you know, have a final issue that was a best of and sort of close it with style. And I can sort of see that he might have been right in some ways. What would have happened if we'd done that and sort of put our energy somewhere else? But, you know, I've been in my job for 35 years. I'm a lifer. And so I really wanted to see what could happen if we kept the magazine going.
The second death was when Creative New Zealand suddenly declined a grant application in 2014.
Oh, that was a bit miserable, yeah.
Why did this, after it rejected giving you an increased grant to pay a co-editor, this was James Brown at the time, to pay him something, yeah. And he had I, to I, quit. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to lean quite heavily on James and a number of other people like Kate Camp and Catherine Chidgey, who were guest editors, but because I was doing it, you know, in the weekends on top of my work, I kind of expected that of everyone else, but that wasn't sustainable. So I did apply for extra funds and never got it. So we just kept going. But when eventually the application was declined, there was never any real reason why that was. I still don't really know what the thinking was there. And it just seemed a bit miserable. And I certainly wasn't in a mood to let them determine the death date of sport. So we got it together and kept going.
And soldiered on, Fergus.
Soldiered on. That's exactly what we did.
There's a lot of,
bit of help from the university.
There's a lot of synergy between Victoria University Press and sport, which I imagine helped a lot. I mean, if you hadn't had Victoria University Press, could you have had sport?
It would have been much harder. You know, I kept sport rigorously separate. You know, I worked on it in the weekends. It had its own computer. The finances were separate. But without the, you know, exposure to writers, the flow of writers and the contacts I had with VUP, you know, it would have been much harder to do. And worked in the other way too. It attracted a lot of young writers. And it gave VUP access to a kind of a you know, punk publishing thing that you can't do as a university press. You have to be slower and more cautious.
I love the way you say often, in the context of lots of young writers, and of course Barbara Anderson, who didn't start writing until she was 50-something, I think, and so yeah, was a beginning writer, an early career writer, but not a young writer. So you had a wide demographic thanks to Barbara Anderson.
We did. I mean, I loved Barbara, miss her dearly. And it was very lucky for me in my sort of professional life that I had that relationship with Barbara early, because it taught me that young is actually the wrong word to use when you're talking about new writers, because writers emerge at any stage of life. And what Barbara had was...
You mean there was yet time, Fergus? There is yet time.
There is time for all of us, yes.
Carry on, I interrupted self-interestedly.
No, what Barbara had was, you know, 60 years of life experience at the same time as she was discovering herself as a writer. So she had all of that acceleration and the experience poured in. Now, that might happen to you. I mean, it might happen to me. It was wonderful to experience, and it really taught me not to put too much store on youth as opposed to freshness, newness.
Do you never want to write a novel?
No. No, writing's the hardest thing there is. Yeah. I'm really happy to have all of these other people to do it for me.
Mm. There's a very lovely, just talking about the people who are featuring in this, which is the second collection of sport writing. The first was edited by Damien Wilkins, I think, wasn't it?
That's right, Great Sporting Moments, which was the first 15 years. And that was a joy, actually, giving Damien the task of going back over what had mostly been my editorial choices through the years and sort of redoing them and picking a best of. And, you know, he came up with some wonderful things there that would have probably been overlooked by me. But this time I was greedy. I wanted to do it myself.
And how did you choose? I mean, there must be things that you wanted to put in, but the book is already very fat.
It's 600 pages, and it's about 15% of what was in the magazine through those years. So it was tough. I read them all. I read every page last summer. But I made quite quick choices as I went. I just made a note of the ones that kind of reminded me of the first excitement I felt when I read them, you know, as submissions. And so I had a pretty good batting order. It's just that there was too much of it. And so it was whittling it down and making those final decisions was really hard, and that took me months.
There's an astonishing story by Eleanor Catton in this book, Descent from Avalanche, that I hadn't read before. Where was it published? Where does it come from? Was it only in sport?
It's only been published in sport before, and it was published early on, shortly after the rehearsal was published and long before the Luminaries was looming into view. It's a terrific story.
It is. I mean, it's beautiful.
It's
very suspenseful and incredibly well observed in terms of the natural world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Ellie's an outdoors person, and the sort of transcription or the description of walking in the high country is amazing, but the fear, the anxiety that comes up in that story, you know, when the weather turns, is amazing. And I think it's a masterpiece.
The bulk of the writing in sport has always been short stories and poems. Not so much criticism, not so much non-fiction. Did you deliberately decide not to cover that?
That was at the beginning. I think I had an idea that it would be a bit more of an orthodox literary magazine, so it would have a review section and some, you know, themed essays. I found reviews too hard. I found commissioning them too difficult, and turning down reviews that you'd commissioned because, not because you didn't agree with them, but because they weren't well done.
Because they were boring.
Was really difficult.
God, it's easy to write a boring review, right?
It's so easy to write a boring,
so
safe review.
So hard to write a good review.
Yep.
Harder than writing a short story, I reckon.
I think you might be right. And I think that one thing that happened with New Zealand writing through the 80s and 90s is that there were more opportunities for writers to publish. You know, there were more magazines and eventually online magazines, and books became a bit easier to publish. So the kind of writing about other writers that people like Bill Manhire and Ian Weddy and co would do in landfall and islands, their equivalents were no longer doing because they were writing for book publication. So it became a less of a thing in New Zealand writing. The other thing that happened with sport early on is that we had a couple of theme issues, and those were a little bit tricky because what happens then is that some writers send you their leftovers, which they can convert to be about the theme, and other people don't send you their really good stuff because they think you're not looking for it this season. So we basically, I came to the view that sport needed to be a passive magazine. You know, I didn't have any of the answers. I wanted to float the magazine there to see what was happening. And what was happening was poetry and fiction in those years. In recent years, the rise of the personal essay has been really interesting, and there's been more of that in sport in recent years. But again, writers can publish those as books now more easily than they could in the past, so they're thinking earlier in the writing process about the final product.
Yeah. It was founded, as you've said, in the golden age of New Zealand publishing. What made it the golden age? What caused that flowering of New Zealand writing?
Well, I think Roger Douglas might have had something to do with it. It was the neoliberal opening up of the New Zealand economy, which has caused enormous amounts of harm that we're still suffering from in the social fabric. But for someone like a young publisher living in central Wellington, it was a good time. Books came in from overseas, and you could get books published in New Zealand. So the number of New Zealand fiction titles published went from under 10 per year at the beginning of the 80s to about 50 per year by the end of the 80s. And, you know, that was a great liberating time in New Zealand culture.
You mean because it was a kind of things were changing and it was exciting, if uncomfortable?
I think things were changing. It was exciting. There was an appetite for New Zealand stories amongst readers. We used to publish many New Zealand plays, Renee and Bruce Stewart and Greg McGee and so on, and they would sell like fiction titles, and they would be reviewed and win prizes because that's what there was to read when there weren't novels. And once the novels came in, the plays stopped selling.
Yeah, interesting.
It was also, sorry.
Carry on.
I was saying it's also about the growth of New Zealand publishing, and books like Other Halves by Sue McCauley and The Bone People, you know, showed international publishers that there was money to be made in the New Zealand market. So they all invested, and the universities had more money to support publishing. So suddenly you had a vibrant and well-supported publishing industry.
So many of the writers had done Bill Manhire's course at the International Institute of Modern Letters. And, of course, you had a link with that because back in the day, Bill Manhire asked you to help assess the student folios. And this, in part, led to somebody, I can't even remember who it was, saying that there were way too many Wellington writers. It was a Wellington clique. It was a representation of a Wellington clique of writers, all from Bill Manhire's course. Is there any substance to that criticism? Who was it, Michael Morrissey?
Oh, I'm sure Michael had a go. Various people have had a go over the years. You know, Patrick Evans had a go. But we ended up publishing some really lovely novels by Patrick. So,
You're such a big-hearted guy, Fergus. You never hold a grudge.
I just want to publish the best, especially not if there's a good book on offer. One of the things about Bill's course is that it got going very early. It had years head start on any other courses around the country. And students have come from all over the country to do it. So they become Wellington writers in a way because they do that formative year in Wellington. But, you know, they're from all round. And why would an ambitious new writer not do the course, which has been proven to have this astonishing success rate? So it's a kind, you know, it's a snowball.
I was interested. I think you mentioned that CK Stead cancelled his subscription because he said he wasn't going to spend money on dingy black and white photos of Wellington. These were the photos of Andrew Ross that you featured in one sport edition. I'm wondering whether he resubscribed after that fit of pique.
Oh, he did. He resubscribed fairly quickly. And, you know, I continued happily to publish his poems from time to time. But then, of course, we fell out again a bit later on. And I don't think we've published him since then.
No, it's an interesting thing, falling out with CK Stead, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens.
Not uncommon.
I mean, you know, we all know people who seem to need to fall out with people as a way of asserting themselves. It's a kind of narcissism in a way, isn't it?
Careful. We'll be headlining you now. Fergus Barrowman accuses CK Stead of. Yeah. Who are you most proud of having discovered? I mean, I'm not suggesting maybe they would have got printed somewhere else in due course, but in the early career where you noticed somebody and you said they had talent and thus it was proven, who are you proudest of?
Oh, I'm much too much of a diplomat to choose one person.
Are you?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, my lifelong relationship with Elizabeth Knox's writing has been at the centre of my life. And I remember the hairs on the back of the neck feeling of reading the first part of After Z-Hour a couple of years before the book was published. Mm. And I look at that first issue of Sport, and it's got Elizabeth in it and Jenny Bornholt and Barbara Anderson. And if I could reach it, I could remember the whole list of names. Mm. And, you know, these were all people who were unknown or just beginning. And, you know, you go on a decade or two and they seem like the central names in New Zealand writing.
It's a really nice read. Is Sport a collector's item now? Are there people with with the entire collection of Sport right back to the first one in 1988?
I've got, I think, two complete runs, and I've got boxes of some issues, and some issues are quite hard to find. It's a mystery, that one. You know, the circulation's been pretty settled through the years, but some issues particularly take life. I don't know why that is.
No, well, the best of luck. You're busy enough with VUP at the moment, are you?
We've got some wonderful things. We're doing more anthologies. We've got a full slate of new writers for next year. Just trying to keep up with the staff who are all younger than me is, it's exciting.
Very nice to talk to you, Fergus. Thank you. Fergus Barrowman, talking about A Game of Two Halves, which is the Best of Sport, the literary magazine that he ran, the best between 2005 and 2019. It's a good read.